All right, we're going to get started right on time. Welcome, everyone. This is session 312, Marriage After a Change in Beliefs. Who's happy? Who's miserable? And why? I'd like to take the opportunity now to remind you to please silence your phones or any other noisemaker gadgets that you have for whatever reason. Make sure they're not making noise. Also, a friendly reminder that there are book sales downstairs and that some of the proceeds will go to Sunstone, so spend money there. I'd also like to remind you that this session is being recorded, so especially during Q&A, make sure you come up to the microphone so those questions can be captured in the session recordings. Those will be posted online. Now I'll take the opportunity to introduce our speaker. Adam Fisher is a PhD candidate in counseling psychology at Indiana University, and he's starting an internship at BYU in a couple weeks. So let's give Adam a round of applause, and I'll turn the time off.
Okay, let's jump right in. So, as you commonly hear, about half of marriages end in divorce. That's actually all marriages. So first marriages are about one-third. But regardless, it's not the best rate. However, as many people are aware, shared religion can provide a buffer against divorce. You affirm the identity of each other, provides meaning and purpose to life. Marrying somebody within your faith or within their faith has been found to be more important for Mormons than almost any other group in the United States. So when there's a problem or a difference in religious beliefs, it can cause quite a shock. So the study that I've done utilized Mormons, not just because this is my cultural background, but also for two other reasons. In previous research, Mormons have been considered a good group for studying changes in religious belief. And also, Mormons have been considered a strict religious group from which leaving the religion may have a greater impact. So if you think of religions on a spectrum here, in terms of how much tension they have with the wider culture, on the left, ultra-liberal, groups like Unitarian, Universalists, Reformed Jews, Liberal, Episcopalian, Presbyterian, just some examples, Lutheran, Methodist, Southern Baptist, or Catholic. Some of these groups would kind of straddle more than one area. Strict would be Mormons or Jehovah's Witnesses. So as you kind of move up the spectrum, some of these religions have more rewards and they also have more demands on the individual and more degree of difference with the wider culture. So, of course, FLDS or Amish, people that are sort of very secluded from secular society. So, as many people are aware, of course, a lot of people questioning the church and or leaving currently. Only about half of the members around the U.S. are actively participating in some form or another. Many of those who doubt suffer a great cost, particularly within their marriages. So the question of my study, among those who stay married, why are some couples so happy and others so miserable? That's sort of how I asked it anyway. Considering that all the individuals in the study had experienced a change in beliefs in either themselves, their partner, or both. I was going to include divorced couples, but I found out, as many grad students do, that you want to study, you know, everything. You want to study all the things. But I had to narrow it down. So the study ended up being about a tenth of the size that I wanted it to be. So it was just married couples. And the participants came from a wide variety of sources. Social media, newspaper ads, a magazine ad, a bunch of internet sites. It was a non-random sample, of course, so there's some bias there due to self-selection, but there's really no way to get a random sample of Mormons, I found, unless like the church gave me like a golden key, which I didn't expect. I think I did try to email the research department. But as you can see, like newspaper ads targeted in the Jell-O Belt from Alberta down to Tucson, I think is the Jell-O Belt. Demographics, so there are 753 individuals who participated in the study, about 45 couples total out of that. Typically, it was harder to get couples together. Usually, if one person would talk to me first or take the survey first, the other one's automatically suspicious. So, if the believer's taking the survey, then the one who's doubting sees me as like this spy for the church. I got called that before in the survey. Someone in the feedback says, I think you're like a spy for the church and you need to get out of this forum. And then, or if the doubter takes it first, then it's like, I'm this like wolf in sheep's clothing and I'm not really going to BYU and stuff like that. So most people were very gracious though. That was just a few fun little responses. Age range 22 to 76. Average age of about 40. 95.1% heterosexual, which is about on par with national averages. 36% with a graduate degree, so this population was very highly educated, which is a lot higher than the average nationally, which is about 17%. I don't know if this means that there are a lot of smart people on Facebook.
Yes.
So if you're on Facebook, you're smart. Or something. Yeah. So, as I said, about two-thirds of the sample came from Facebook and Twitter. No Pinterest, so sorry. If that's your media of choice. Forums and blogs, about 18%. Word of mouth, where one spouse takes and the other one says, you've got to take this! I hope I didn't start any fights. And then some advertisements in newspapers, which weren't very productive, or they didn't really bring in a lot of participants. Most were living within the U.S., about 96% in the Pac-Man there. A couple from other countries, some countries in Europe, Canada, which I don't know what was up with the Canadians. They really like went after Canada with this. And I got like six. So I don't know what's going on up there. If anyone knows any Canadians or you are Canadian, like let me know afterward like what happened. Because I really went after them. And I got like, yeah. Some other countries, unknown. You know, they're the people that think I was like a spy for the church and I was going to turn in their information to their bishops. It wasn't. From the U.S., there are participants from 46 states, which was kind of cool to see, mostly from the western region. I did miss out on Louisiana, Mississippi, Delaware, and New Hampshire. New Hampshire was like, no, we're not doing this, you know. Live free or die. I'm not taking this stupid survey. It's like half an hour. But yeah, mostly from the western region. Next was the south, but that's mostly Texas and Virginia for the most part. Okay, so considering all the participants were married, some were separated, but all were married, I wanted to find out what would predict the quality of marriage. And so marital quality is a little bit different than like satisfaction or happiness. So it's kind of a different idea, but if you have any questions about what that means, we can talk about it later. But basically, I tried to think of all the variables that I could that might predict the quality of marriage in this situation, and in the end, it came away with about 8 that really had an impact on the quality of marriage that would predict that. Number one, as you might guess, obviously, is how negative was the impact. So, for this question, I had people describe what the most negative thing about the change in beliefs was, either their own or their partner's. And then I had them rate it, just simply, you know, this didn't bother me at all. Like, why are you taking the survey? Or, like, this was, you know, catastrophic. Who changed? So, was it the spouse who changed? Was it themselves who changed, or did both change? As you might guess, marriages where both changed were a little bit happier, but not a lot. The believers were a little bit less happy than those who changed, but not significantly more. Next is what I was calling a gap change. So if you look at this little graph, imagine this scale is, say, level of orthodoxy. And at marriage, they look back when they got married and they say, well, I was like a 5, you know, on orthodoxy, as high as you could be, and my spouse was, you know, pretty much up there, maybe had some less orthodox views, reads Denver Snuffer or whatever. The gap change would be then how wide this gets. So there's a change in beliefs, and then let's say the wife here in this case goes down to a 1, and he goes down to a 4. So now there are 3. So the gap change there would be 2, if that makes sense. Okay. So the second, or third, I mean, variable then, would be how much gap change there was in orthodoxy. And orthodoxy is measured by, you know, belief in the Book of Mormon and the first vision and prophet and things like that. Positive impact of change, so each partner, how much positive result did they see from the change in beliefs? Holding a temple recommend actually was interesting. It came up as the 5th most predictive variable. Now, interesting thing here is holding a temple recommend for the believer was correlated with a more negative impact. But holding a temple recommend for the doubter was positive. Which, if you think about it, kind of makes sense. But it was an interesting finding. So it's better. It's better for the doubter to have a temple recommend than the believer.
Initially,
at the point of, or I mean, when they took the survey.
Present day. Then.
Yeah. So all you marriages, you need to say, you know, doubter, you should have a temple recommend, and I'm going to give mine up. Just kidding. Don't do that. None of this is causal. So. But it was kind of interesting, and I thought that'll start some good arguments.
Sorry, since we're asking questions from the floor, can you go back to positive impact of change, what that meant?
Yeah, so similar to negative impact of change, I had them list the most positive aspects of the change in beliefs, and then rate how impactful that was. So the believer would say, well, I'm a lot more open-minded because of my spouse, or I'm more understanding of people who doubt. Or they would, occasionally they would say nothing, but almost always people have something that was positive about it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Another interesting one was the age of the believing spouse at marriage. So if the believing spouse was over 25 when they got married, the quality of marriage was lower. And this is interesting because typically in marital research, older couples, couples who get married when they're a little bit older, do better. But in this study, it was actually found that it's better to be younger. And even like the 19, I didn't have an 18-year-old, but there were some 19, 20. They were happier than the ones who were older.
At what point?
Over 25. Yeah, so if the believer was 26 when they got married and then there was this change in beliefs, it was a lot harder for them. I'm assuming maybe it's because they're more set in life and how things should be, and they have a harder time dealing with the change, while these younger couples that were 19 when they get married, as much as the research typically suggests you shouldn't do that, they kind of learn to grow up together in a way, and they're younger, so they sort of adapt more to it. Length of marriage, again, a similar kind of finding. Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. The age, could it also be that you were point in time? I'm sorry.
If possible, let's save the questions to the end. No, that way we can capture them all in the context.
Or tweet that to me and I'll respond. I'll respond like under here. Yeah. So length of marriage, couples that have been married for over 15 years were a little worse. It'd be better. It was better, or correlated with a little bit better relationships for couples who hadn't been married as long, which again was kind of surprising to me. So being married more than 15 years compared to those who've been married less than 7, there was a big difference there. And then another variable was the gap change, and this was in church commitment, basically their level of commitment to the church. And I'll go over in a second the variables that didn't matter. But basically, and I've kind of simplified all the statistical nonsense that I spent years and years and tons of money learning at school to this little slide. My models, these 8 variables together, sort of explain about 22.5% of why one couple is satisfied or has a better quality of marriage and the other does not, which means that all this gray area here is unexplained by the change of belief. So that means there's a lot of other variables besides the change of beliefs that impact the quality of a marriage that I didn't measure. So what didn't predict marital quality? How long it had been? So couples that have been, I think this most recent was like 3 weeks. How long ago the change of beliefs happened before the survey? So 3 weeks to 25 years didn't matter. Anecdotally, it does seem to be that there are some like stages that couples pass through, or really intense, difficult periods, like a year or 6 months or whatever. In one case, it was 27 years. Had a response that said, "We've been miserable for 27 years, and we worked through this, and we made it, and now we're both really happy. So stick it out." No guarantees, but there are others that it's like three to six months. Just depends. But the time didn't matter. Gender didn't matter. I thought for sure if it's the man who leaves, like, this is going to be much worse. This is what I thought from reading people's, you know, Facebook comments. But it didn't matter at all. Level of education. Church attendance, whether or not the doubter was still active or less active or inactive, didn't make a difference. Whether or not the doubter became an atheist or agnostic, or whether they were still a theist in some form, didn't matter. Referral source, so I tracked whether they came from Facebook or online forums or whatnot, there was no difference. So Facebookers aren't any different. Couple orthodoxy level of marriage, so if both were, quote, true believers when they got married, and then they, you know, one of them experiences this fall, it didn't matter whether they started very orthodox or, you know, moderately orthodox, didn't make a difference. Then I had a couples just rate briefly how happy they were, 0 to 7. And I grouped the responses of those who were extremely unhappy or fairly unhappy, which I call miserable, versus very happy, extremely happy, or perfect. I had like 40 people say they were perfect. I'm not there. I don't know if they're like delusional or they're just really happy people. That's cool. So I asked these people, what do you think the main factors were that contributed to the degree of happiness in your relationship? So this is for the perfect and very happy and sort of annoyingly happy people. Because there are a lot, and this was surprising to me. I thought, you know, based on the forums, and if you've ever read, like, Recovery from Mormonism or just, you know, a lot of these groups on Facebook, it seems like people are miserable, and, like, I read Bushman, and now my wife's left me. And it sounds so rough, but there's actually a lot of happy people out there that aren't speaking up. So this is their chance. So for the believers whose spouse had experienced a change in beliefs, these are the top 10 reasons why they said that their marriage was so awesome. Personal qualities, my spouse, you know, he changed in beliefs, but he's really an awesome guy. Or I'm just really patient. Or, you know, things like that. Communication, pretty vague. Couples come in to see me and they say, well, we have a communication problem. That can mean anything. But they talk. They try to communicate, you know, even if it's grunts. They try to get things across. The asterisk just means these are qualities or factors that were shared across all happy marriages. Love. I'm just going to keep talking. Sweet. Have faith. All right. Like, I love my spouse. It seems pretty simple, but some people really struggle with that. Personal faith. Some doubters don't realize this. I'm saying doubter is just a shorthand, by the way. It doesn't mean that I would, you know, call you a doubter at lunch or anything. It's just easier to say. Sorry. Some doubters, you know, obviously are invested or want their spouse to sort of, you know, see the light or come more towards them in terms of their way of disbelieving or not believing or whatever. But a lot of times for the believing spouse, the faith is really a helpful thing, and it guides things like forgiveness. And a lot of believers who are really happy had some kind of spiritual experience that told them to stay married. So they were going to get divorced. And then they prayed in the temple and they were told, don't leave your spouse. So that does happen, if you're wondering. If you haven't had that answer, or your spouse hasn't had that answer, then maybe they're just not righteous enough. Keep working. Friendship. These couples are good friends. They have stuff in common. They like to do things together. Even though the pain of the difference in beliefs is still real and strong, they're good friends. They're committed to the marriage regardless. They do have some similarities. This is a point that I could talk more about later, but basically for these couples, they do have other things in common. They didn't get married just for the church. There were other things they liked about each other or other things they liked to do together. Differentiation, meaning they were okay with being different. A lot of us, it's really common in a marriage to struggle with the other one being different and being okay with that. It's a really, really big struggle that most of us have to deal with, except for these really awesome people. But I've had to struggle with it. So, they work on the marriage, not necessarily therapy. Some find therapy useful, a few didn't. But that is one thing. But they're always sort of committed to working on things. They support each other. They feel support from family, or sometimes not always family. Sometimes in-laws are more problematic than anything else. But that's normal, right, in a marriage? So an example here, not her real name, Alicia 28. Yeah, that's me. That's me before my hair transplants. It's pretty good, huh? I had a willingness to see past checkbox items of church standards, attending all meetings, etc., and focus on learning to truly love in a Christ-like way. Deciding the gospel of Christ would lead me to stay married if possible. Answers to prayers, willingness to compromise, and a willingness to attend individual and couples therapies. This is a believer explaining why she's just so awesome. She's happy, and this is a good... this is a stock photo, obviously. I didn't like, all right, guys, huddle up. I'm kind of mocking the happy people, but really, I'm really happy for them. Jealous? Yeah. I'm not meaning to sound to be cynical or anything. I don't know why it's coming across that way. Maybe it's the nerves. So for the people who changed, communication, again, there's a lot of similarities here. Friendship, love, personal qualities. I'm just a really good guy. Or my spouse is just really understanding. Respect, differentiation, again, similar thing. Children, we have children together. We're working on the marriage. Number 10 there, difficulties. So we've overcome other difficulties in the past. We lost a child 10 years ago. All these kinds of different things where the change in beliefs then didn't seem so big because they had been through hardship before. We know that we are both on different paths, and that's okay. Church stuff is still a tough subject to talk about, but we spend so much more time taking care of each other's needs, in a relationship because we want to make it work. We agree on a lot of things, we just get there differently. We have two beautiful children, and we enjoy being around each other and having fun as a family. Bottom line, treat your spouse like a lifelong friend. Nothing else matters. So when both changed, communication, friendship, love, differentiation, similarities, all things that we've mentioned before, teamwork, commitment, flexibility, sex finally came up, number 10 there for the both changed.
Tell me again what differentiation is.
So basically, in layman's terms, Lemuel's terms, you can... how much difference in your spouse you can tolerate. Like, your spouse being a different person. Some people feel really anxious about making sure that you're the same. And differentiation would be, like, I'm okay with my spouse not being the same as me.
Like, having different interests.
And being okay with that. Right.
Tom and Marie, a little bit
rock and roll. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Once I realized that my husband was not influenced by the devil or anti-Mormon, but simply wanted to know the truth, I was extremely happy to follow him in his journey out of the LDS Church. Sorry, I didn't mean to say it sing-songy, it was funny. I still enjoy my friendship with members, so I occasionally attend meetings, and I'm grateful that my husband doesn't feel it as a threat. So that's an example of differentiation. So they both left, she's sort of left, but she still likes to attend, and he's like, cool. That's basically differentiation right there. So then I asked the very unhappy, perfectly unhappy couples, what do you think contributed to the degree of unhappiness in your relationship? For the believers, my spouse's change came up the most. Spouse's behaviors. A lot of times these behaviors, the behavior changes happen too quickly. The quickest I've seen is one individual saw the PBS Mormons documentary and within like a few hours had gone out and bought beer and put it in the fridge and was smoking with his friends. I'm not kidding. This is like 3 hours. Don't do that. Give her some time. She freaked, as you might imagine, like validly so, and they didn't last. And he saw that he had like destroyed her. I mean, couple weeks maybe. Spouse's infidelity was mentioned a lot. Not for all, I mean, this is probably, 5-10% of couples, but it was mentioned. Mental illness of either spouse, major depression, bipolar disorder, borderline personality. So a lot of these things you're starting to see aren't necessarily related to the change in beliefs, poor communication. We weren't good at talking before either. Not really friends. They weren't really friends beforehand. Domestic abuse or trauma and abuse and stuff from childhood. Emotional pain. They mentioned things like difficult anger, hurt, betrayal, things like that. Finances. Can't get away from that one. General poor qualities of spouse. So this is like the opposite of like, my spouse is awesome. It's like, oh, he's just a jerk. Or I'm just a jerk. They said that too. My husband has lied to and been unfaithful to me for most of our marriage. Even before he told me, before he told me about his concerns with the church and left it, he had been addicted to porn, physically cheated on me, and lied to me regularly. I didn't know about any of this until we'd been married for 6 years, and it's been a process learning it all. So who is miserable amongst those who changed? Number one, just like the believers, were miserable. The most frequently mentioned thing was, well, I changed. So a lot of times this was expressed in, like, I didn't mean to, or I didn't mean to read Rust Unrolling. It just fell into my lap, and I just started, you know, I was forced. But they would sort of lament in a way. I mean, they were happy that they had changed to some degree, but on the other hand, it was a very difficult thing, and they didn't like being that different. General differences they would mention were just so different. And again, this sort of connotes like a difficulty with differentiation. Number three, what I call the big bad church. A lot of like blaming the church, of course. To some degree, I think it's sort of a way to not blame the spouse, and it's sort of touching in that way. But a lot of negativity towards the church, which makes sense. Poor communication, the GPQ, general poor qualities, mental illness and trauma, lack of friendship, bad sex, number eight, we're getting up there, emotional pain, and then this idea of a bad start to marriage. A lot of couples sort of carry around this myth. It's actually a myth that there was some flaw in why they got married. Like, well, we shouldn't have gotten married because we just got married for this reason, or we had a kid, so we got married, or so a lot of couples sort of have this this myth that they carry around. Well, what really happens is most couples, I would say almost all, have some reason they got married that was positive. But as the relationship becomes worse for some, they sort of rewrite the origin story and they see it as more negative. We've evolved into very different people since we got married. Then, and all the doubters wear hoodies, right? At least in Utah. That's how you know who they are. It made sense at the time, but now it doesn't. Certainly my disbelief in the church has been a big part of my evolution. My wife's expectations have increased, many of which are wrapped in the framework of the LDS Church's belief system. Now that I don't believe any longer, I essentially disappoint her every day. Last but not least, these poor souls. Both have changed, and they're miserable. It happens, actually, a lot. Not as much as the other groups, but there are those cases. So in these cases, you know, you really can't blame it all on the religion. Number one, we're just jerks. They would just sort of acknowledge that, you know, we need to be better people, and my spouse isn't a great guy, or my... Differences, we're just too different. We both left the church, but we didn't have anything in common anyway, and now we really don't have anything in common. We weren't friends. We're not friends now. Bad sex, number four, came up. So there's this, the general thought with couples therapy and sex therapy is that when sex is good enough in a marriage, it's about 15-20% of the marriage relationship, and when it's bad, it's about 90%. Mental illness and trauma, poor communication, the bad start to the marriage. We got married for the church and no other reason. Money. Change in beliefs was an interesting one. One couple had a lot of corrosive arguments around how to leave the church. So, you know, if there's one true church, there's also one true way to leave it. And we know this is true. So in one case, the husband was like, yeah, let's just leave the church, whatever, no big deal, like, meh, don't really care. And the wife was really upset with that because she wanted to process and she was really angry. And she got mad at him, like, how can you just be so cool with everything? And felt like he was really invalidating her in a way. And so they really struggled. Still blaming the church, of course. We had some marital struggles. When we lost the church, everything fell. Before that, during bad times, you hung on because of celestial ideals. Once those were gone, everything else crumbled. Life's purpose was removed and obsolete. We lost a major place of positive energy. All we had left was an angry black hole. So, in other words, happy couples, they communicate well. They love each other. They're generally decent people. They're good enough people. I think good enough is really the key term. They're good friends. They have some similarities, not that you need to have a lot in common. On the other hand, for these miserable couples, the change of beliefs is more central to their relationship. They struggle communicating. Their differences, all couples have these big differences. We all do, but in this case, the differences were up front and center all the time. Many struggle with depression, anxiety, addictions, or other mental illnesses. And as I said, some feel that they themselves or their spouses are just jerks. So a lot of these findings are sort of supported by John Gottman's research. He studied couples for over 35 years, and he was asked to sort of summarize his findings in 2 points. Happily married couples, one, behave like good friends, and they handle their conflict in gentle, positive ways. Two, they're able to repair negative interactions during an argument, during an argument. So this isn't, I mean, it is good to repair a month later. If that's all it takes you, that's fine. Do what you need to do. You can go to bed angry, by the way, that's a myth. As long as you repair it. You don't need to solve everything at 3 in the morning like my wife and I try to do. I mean, I try to do. She's like, let's go to bed. They're able to process their negative emotions fully. So, questions?
Come up to the mic if you have any questions. And this is good. We have an excellent time. So.
Maybe I missed this because I was a few minutes late. I'm not clear. Was every how many couples were there?
Like
that you
were both?
Were you no? That you studied. I mean that you surveyed.
There were 750 individuals.
Oh,
and out of that, 45 were couples. So 90 individuals where both partners took the survey.
Oh, maybe that answers my question, because my answer was the most intriguing part of all this, and it may not be your study, but is when one of the couples doesn't feel like they can be open to the other about the change they're experiencing. Now, was that experience true for, do you know how many people that was true for?
That definitely comes up. Yeah, there's a lot of people would say things like, my spouse knows a little bit, but they don't know the extent of it.
Right.
Or we've got a baby blessing coming up, I don't want to do it. And I haven't they know that, like, I don't believe in historicity of the Book of Mormon or something, but they don't realize that I'm an atheist. And I'm afraid to bring that up.
So that was folded in with all the other data?
Yeah, and it's interesting because they're afraid to tell for good reason. Because oftentimes when they do, it's not good. But at the same time, if they don't and they keep it a secret,
right,
when it does come out, there's a lot of betrayal. Like,
right,
you've been reading all these books on your own. You never told me. In some cases, they don't ever say anything. And like 10 years later, the spouse comes out and says, you know, I've been studying for 5-6 years or whatever. And now I don't believe any of it. I think it's a big fraud. Like, what? Whereas some talk about it all along the way. Others mention it once, and the spouses don't ever talk about that again. And of course, they go underground.
Yeah.
It's sort of the automatic. I mean, whenever you give your spouse an ultimatum, like, don't ever read this, like, I don't know about you, but I would be like, all right, I'm reading this.
Yeah.
You know?
Same with parenting, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Did you look at, or did you see an indication of finding a substitute or another religious community being a factor in marital happiness?
Not real thoroughly, but the only finding I found on that was whether or not they were still believers, whether or not they had sort of a spiritual orientation. So one of the gap changes that I looked at was in spirituality. So, like, I feel close to God. Spiritual feelings are an important part of my life. Those kinds of questions didn't matter. So, I don't care if my spouse is spiritual. They just need to be committed to the church, kind of thing. I mean, that's not what they're actually saying, but it wasn't actually a factor, you know, on this subconscious level.
First of all, thanks for the presentation. That's a cool study. You mentioned people's perceptions of personal qualities as well as things like mental health issues. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you measured directly in a standardized way personality or like measures of psychopathology, or if it was just the perception of those.
Yeah, it was just perception. Initially, I wanted to, okay. And I had a survey that was about 3 hours long. So I plan on doing that in the future, for sure.
One more. What was the gender breakdown of the participants?
54% female, about 46% male.
Thanks. Yeah.
It seems so far that the decision to leave the church was irreversible, or nobody responded that they ever came back. Did you encounter any of that in your study?
So some people who didn't come back and some people who did, is that kind of what? I mean, there are plenty of people who had experienced a change that were still active in some way. It's not as common where somebody comes back in the same form that they were before. You know, that whole, you hear that saying all the time, like you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, despite how hard you try. I've tried. With toothpaste. I squeezed out too much. There are a lot of partners who had changed that were still sort of active in some way, or they sort of reconfigurated their beliefs. So it's not always like this gap change from like 5 in orthodoxy to 0. Sometimes it was like 3 to 2. But it was enough that it caused conflict. So there was sort of a variety in how much they changed.
All right, I have a question.
Yeah.
Of those, 45 couples that both took the survey, was there any discrepancy in their reported level of happiness in the marriage?
I haven't looked at that yet, since there's so much data, but... I would be interested. I looked at a few. I haven't done all of them. The few that I looked at, they were pretty accurate.
Like they agreed with each other.
Okay, yeah. Cool. So like, my spouse, you know, doesn't believe that Joseph Smith saw the Father of Jesus Christ. Like they would both rate that about the same. Like if it was like 0, they both put 0, or 1 or 2. Like it was usually really close.
Cool.
Yeah.
Asking for a friend.
Hi, friend.
Related to that, I'd be interested to see if the couple, you know, both of the couples who both responded, if their level of happiness is higher than, you know, just the ones who were individually responding.
Oh, yeah.
Because it indicates kind of a level of trust between the two of them. You know, if one person says, here, will you take this, and the other person trusts them to not.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'd be interested to see.
It does seem likely that, you know, if both are willing and, you know, they're not suspicious. Because as you can imagine, there's a lot of suspicion on both sides.
Did you find that most believing spouses, when it first happens, or they're just kind of like, don't want to hear anything about it? Or
for some, for sure. There is that. It's not everyone, but...
So some of them are open to the fact, the hearing the facts of the non-believer,
or they'll listen because it doesn't seem, maybe the non-believer sort of sugarcoats it a little bit and sort of tests the water, like, well, you know, what do you really think about this church essay on the Book of Abraham? When really they're saying like, I'm an atheist and I want out. They're trying to sugarcoat it to make it sound a little better. But yeah, there's definitely a response sometimes where, you know, it's fear. They're afraid of what's happening. You know, this isn't about issues. This isn't about history and all this other stuff. This is, you know, lowercase t, traumatic.
So here's where the double blind falls apart. I was one of those 45 couples.
Hey. he's a plant, by the way.
Right. Well, no, I know we've never met. Though we went to school right across the park.
We never met.
Is there some element of a snapshot? Like since my wife and I took that, things have changed quite substantially.
For the
better.
Oh yes.
And so, are you looking at, like, is this part of your thesis and you're going to leave it, or are you planning on having something over like a period of years afterward.
Yeah, I definitely plan on doing a longitudinal kind of follow-up, so 5-10 years, and see who is still together. In that case, I could probably predict divorce more accurately, because some couples will be divorced by then. Sorry, they're just giving the rates. So it would be nice to be able to predict long-term. And then the couples that have improved, like, why is that? And there'll be a lot of interesting data in the future.
So further to that, the longitudinal, when this was a snapshot, so you have some who are 50, 60 years old, some who are 20, 25. Did you notice deltas between the groups? Were you able to group by age? For example, I think a younger person, and I hate to generalize, but you know, when older people tend to hang on, younger ones seem to just bag it. So did you notice that?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Interestingly, as I kind of mentioned earlier, the older couples did have a bit of a harder time with it. There are some older adults and I don't know, what's the word, not older adults, what's the word for like between 60 or between 50 and 60?
Prime of life.
Prime of life. 50 and 70, prime of life. 65 is the new black. There were plenty of those that benefited from having gone through a lot together already. So that was a definite plus. So when the change of beliefs happened, it wasn't as big of a thing. You know, if you've had a family member or a son or daughter die or die by suicide or some kind of severe illness or just any kind of big trauma, that seemed to be a buffer against, you know, the change of beliefs. It's like, we got this. You know, this isn't too bad.
Adam, thank you for this study. It's amazing. I'm familiar with Gottman, and one of his kind of ideas and theories is that he can kind of predict whether they're going to get a divorce by how they communicate.
In 2 minutes.
Yeah, like 3 or 5 seconds, I think it is.
Oh, yeah.
That quick. It's just like the interaction.
I'm watching you all now.
Unless, of course, there's intervention and they can learn better communication habits. But it tends to kind of go along with the study in that leaving the church or changing the belief isn't necessarily the thing that will predict divorce if you do that longitudinal study. It's actually how they handle that crisis and whether... And so... I think I'm just seeing or predicting that might be the case, because no matter what the crisis is, it's how they handle it, and a change of faith might just be that trigger crisis at that point, you know, that makes them unsettled. So I'm just wondering if you might agree that if you were to predict, like in a longitudinal study, if that might be.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say because you know the gap change in orthodoxy was so profound. In terms of how it would predict the quality of marriage. But I think that does get moderated, or what's the regular term? That variable is affected by also, like, are they friends? You know, like, if you're good friends with somebody, you can handle this change more readily than you can. Like, how much tolerance are you going to have for a spouse when you're not friends with them, you don't really talk, and then their beliefs change? It's going to be really hard. Some couples still... you know, make it out of that. So it's not like it's hopeless. A lot of couples do. There's a lot of couples who were very happy now, but went through very, very difficult times. So even like up to like suicidal ideation and, you know, we're not going to be able to do this. And a lot of thoughts about divorce and contacting a lawyer even. But then something pulled them back and they were actually able to improve. So it does happen.
First off, thanks for the study. I was one of those couples that took it as well.
Thank you.
Question on it. Did you isolate variables based on like born of the church versus a convert, and then how long they've been in the religion?
Yeah, those are going to be other variables I'm going to have to study in the future. Those got weeded out. Like I was asking about that. I was asking about word of wisdom initially, and like whether the spouse still wears garments or not, and all these different types of things. And my advisor said, this is like 10 studies. Cut all this out. From what I've talked to, this is just anecdotally, some who are converts tend to handle it a little better, or if they are raised themselves in sort of a mixed faith home, the idea of close family members or friends, like not being church members, seem to sort of buffer the negative effects a little bit. That's just my hunch and from what I've seen, but as far as the data, I don't know yet.
In your studies, were you able to find out by if you're able to sugarcoat the amount of the disaffection, like we talked about earlier? Did that come up at all? Were you able to
make
it better?
Right. That hasn't come out as you want, like a handbook, you know, a complete idiot's guide to leaving the church and not hurting your spouse too much. Coming next year, you know.
Should write that.
From Deseret Book.
Along those lines, it does seem like your research suggests that the way couples stay together through a change in beliefs is similar to the way couples change together, period. And that's by treating each other nicely and, you know, the Gottman thing.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, is there a role, do you think, in how the church can, you know, release some kind of guidance or some kind of statement that explicitly makes it clear that a change in beliefs isn't grounds for divorce? Because, I mean, I think that's a mindset of a lot of couples that go through this that feel that they maybe feel obligated to end the marriage because of an apostasy.
There is some of that. In fact, I have close friends who are both active believing members of the church, and one of these friends said to me, if I ever left the church, she'd divorce me. And she's like, yep.
Yeah, that's really yucky. I mean, it seems
well, that's
like
what I told
them.
I said, that's really yucky.
Ill.
But they're both kind of in agreement on it. But
they're compatible.
Yeah, they're compatible. I wanted to touch on his question earlier, which I now forgot what it was. I'll have to talk to him afterward.
No, I just wanted to say that there was an Ensign article, I only know because it came out at a key point for my husband and I, that said, don't leave your spouse if they leave the church. And I don't necessarily think that that couple knows what they're saying, because when my husband and I, 17 years ago, married, we said we will never get divorced unless there's abuse.
Yeah, your deal breakers, right?
Or apostasy. But we are at a place where we are in very, very different places within the church and the church framework and our religious beliefs and our belief in God. And we are best friends. And
awesome.
That's where it's going to stay. So.
Yeah, it is fine. It's important to discuss deal breakers. But then again, you never know. And like on the question earlier, some people come out all at once. Like, by the way, bam, drop the mic, this is everything. And others come out slowly over 20 years. Or others come out slowly over 20 years, and it's a slow death. And it still ruins, it still ends the marriage. I'd say there's no rhyme or reason for why, there is something about kindness and gentleness and, you know, now I'm preaching love unfeigned and all this stuff, about how a person discloses the unbelief or whatever, but I don't know yet if there's a rhyme or reason for when you should do it or how much you should do it once.
So, kind of a thumbnail is, if you have a fairly good marriage, mm-hmm. you tend to weather this, and if you have a crappy marriage, it can be rough.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah. As a researcher, maybe.
Maybe. Yeah. Excellent. And politics.
Yeah.
Okay, so, since you have a lot of Facebook responders, was there any study on the level of Facebook activity? Because, well, there's going to be shameless self-promotion,
bad.
Too. As in, like, you know, I'm in 79 different anti-Mormon groups.
76.
Or she's not in any, or... Uh-huh. By the way, we took the survey, me and the primary president there, so... So is there any study or having that level of support within a face... Within that, like, there's communities.
Right.
That I know, coming out for me... was really important.
Yeah.
And that was kind of supportive, and I sort of went through how do I do this?
Yeah.
I actually Googling atheist married to Mormon led me to the Mormon Expression podcast, to their Facebook group, to kind of the world.
Yeah.
So is there any study on that support or the Facebook or other networks?
I don't know of any data on that, but it seems to me that if the group is supportive of the marriage, this is true also, like if you have a friend, if you have a mutual friend, are they a friend of the marriage or are they just a friend of one of you? Not in the sense that, like, I mean, you have different friends, that's fine, but, like, infidelity is more likely to happen when there's a person who isn't really supportive of the relationship. Mm-hmm. So sometimes the groups, not your group.
We'll get to that.
sometimes groups and forums online I've seen can be very disparaging of belief or not, or unbelief, and not really be supportive of marriage. I have seen plenty of groups, though, that tend to support that as, like, the first thing. And obviously individuals need support, but as long as the ultimate goal in mind is the relationship. If a couple wants to stay together, same for individual therapists. Sometimes you go to individual therapists and they'll validate you and say, yeah, your spouse is really an awful jerk. And it's sort of, therapists sometimes unwittingly promote divorce, but they really need to, if they're seeing individuals, they really need to make sure that they're supporting the relationship first and foremost.
So that brings me to the shameless plugs.
Do it.
I was in, there's a group called Former Mormons with Believing Spouses. Awesome group.
FMWBSs.
FMWBS. And so as I'm reading all this thing, oh my gosh, this poor guy, his wife totally freaked out and said, you know, I'm out of here and that kind of stuff. I was talking about it with the primary president. And she said, well, gee, there really should be a reciprocal group for the other side for the believing spouses of horrible apostates.
That's not what they call it at all. It's much more noble.
No. So we couldn't really find one, so we started one. It's a group called Another Testament of Marriage.
And it's wonderful and so much help. As a believing spouse, so much help.
Highly recommend it. It's not going to convince you to leave your spouse. They're very supportive of marriage.
So much help.
I'm kind of the lone token apostate because she didn't know much about Facebook when we started it. And so I don't want to. It's actually probably the one I'm most active in lately is now that they let me talk.
What's the name of that again?
Another Testament of Marriage. There's a public page. You can go there. It's really sappy with pictures of the temple.
If you need information on that, see Kyle after.
Yeah.
And there are, there's a little bit more time, so we've got 3 more minutes, so maybe 3 more questions.
So first, thanks for the study. This is really interesting. I'm anxious to see it published and get dive into it more. One thing I was wondering about is, it talks about children being a factor occasionally. I assume that they're a factor in a lot of these other things.
Yeah.
What a couple agrees on or their ability to let the other couple differentiate when it comes to choices with kids, that becomes more tricky.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to say about, like, anything you've noticed as far as ages that kids are at and choices with children being a factor for good and for bad?
That's actually, I'm working on a book proposal right now, and I'd like to do a follow-up study just on parenting because it seems to be one of the biggest issues when people describe, well, you know, what has been hard about this. Parenting comes up a lot. Even for really happy couples, they still have a hard time parenting. Now, even in the same religion, parenting is hard. Parenting together is hard. Now, throw in this, you know, even wider disparity, it can be really challenging. But I don't have any data yet on how to do that better.
All right, we have one more.
I'm wondering about studies of a parallel kind of change where a married couple has a conversion of one spouse, could be to Mormonism or could be to Church of Scientology or whatever. I'm wondering, are there studies of this kind, whether they involve conversion to Mormonism and its effect on a marriage that you could compare your findings to?
Yeah, there isn't a lot yet, unfortunately. There's a lot of research on mixed faith couples, but there isn't a lot yet. I would like to study, if I could get a big enough sample, I would like to study, say, you know, couples who started out as atheists and then one became religious, or joined another religion. there were a few couples in the study, or a few individuals that left Mormonism and joined another church. I didn't see a difference between those and those who became atheists. It didn't seem to matter. But yeah, definitely future research.
All right, thank you so much, Adam. Let's give him a round of applause.